this settlement clearly restores DOJ's credibility as to its commitment to aggressive FCPA enforcement. We've had 2 years of relatively slow activity, but this brings much needed attention back to anti-corruption risks as a continuing concern for all global companies. We all read about artificial intelligence, data privacy, cybersecurity risks, as well as generalized climate and other disclosure risks. Anti-corruption risks have stood the test of time, and if anything, have maintained a steadfast, steady position in the list of significant risks for global companies.
Global companies face unprecedented risks and challenges in today's economy. To mitigate these legal and economic risks, companies are rapidly embracing and elevating the importance of robust ethics and compliance programs to promote positive corporate citizenship. On Corruption, Crime, and Compliance, you'll hear from industry leaders and insiders about how to create effective ethics and compliance programs that will mitigate risks and maximize financial performance. Here's your host, Michael Volkoff.
Well, welcome, everybody. This is Michael Volkoff, and we're here for a deep dive into the Gunvor FCPA settlement. Lo and behold, after two slow enforcement years, DOJ is starting off 2024 with a relative quote-unquote bang. First, DOJ reached a large settlement with SAP in January, and now DOJ has reached a blockbuster settlement with Gunvor, the commodity trading company based in Switzerland, for $661 million. And Gunvor is one of the world's largest commodities trading companies, and DOJ's enforcement action here represents a quote-unquote return to its long-standing aggressive approach to FCPA enforcement. First off, DOJ did not permit Gunvor to enter into a deferred or non-prosecution agreement. Instead, DOJ required Gunvor to plead guilty to one count of FCPA conspiracy. Gunvor entered into a plea agreement, pled guilty to an information charging them with conspiracy to violate the anti-bribery provisions of the FCPA, and then the plea was entered. The court sentenced Gunvor to pay a criminal penalty of $374 million and to forfeit another $287 million in ill-gotten gains. The sentence includes credits of up to one quarter of the criminal fine for amounts Gunvor pays to resolve investigations by Swiss and Ecuadorian authorities into the same misconduct, so long as those payments are made within 1 year. The Attorney General's Office from Switzerland simultaneously announced a parallel resolution of its investigation into Gunvor's misconduct that involved payment of approximately $98 million by Gunvor to Swiss authorities. Now, Gunvor's conduct occurred in Ecuador, and it stretched over nearly a decade and involved systemic bribery payments to officials of the Ecuadorian Ministry of Hydrocarbons and Petro Ecuador, the Ecuadorian state-owned oil company, in exchange for valuable contracts to acquire oil products. In total, Gunvor earned more than $384 million in profits from the business that it corruptly obtained. It's important to note here that we have, again, the similar pattern of individual enforcement actions building into a corporate resolution. We've seen this pattern occurring last year, and now it's almost as if you see individual enforcement actions or pleas or cases that are brought and resolutions with cooperation, you can bet that you're going to see a corporate enforcement action to follow it. So if you look over the last few years, there have been four individuals who were involved in this Gunvor's bribery scheme who ended up basically trying to resolve their own cases and cooperating or continuing to challenge. So let's go through those. Antonio Perez Yascaza, a former consultant for Gunvor, pled guilty on October 7th, 2020. To one count of conspiracy to violate the FCPA and one count of conspiracy to commit money laundering. His brother, Enrique Perez, a former consultant to Gunvor, also pled guilty on that same day. Raymond Cahoot, this was a big and well-publicized resolution, a former Gunvor employee and agent, pled guilty on April 6, 2021 to one count of conspiracy to commit money laundering and obviously cooperated. And perhaps one of the more important resolutions was with Nilson Arias Sandoval, a former senior Petro Ecuador official, pled guilty on January 19th, 2022, to one count of conspiracy to commit money laundering. In support of the resolution, DOJ cited the following factors, including the nature and seriousness of the offense and Gunvor's credit for its cooperation with the investigation. It did not earn voluntary disclosure credit in this case. They produced documents from multiple foreign countries. They provided information through their own internal investigation. They made detailed factual presentations to DOJ. They arranged for the interview of an employee based outside the U.S. They collected, analyzed, and organized a lot of information and produced an analysis of trading activity conducted by multiple outside forensic accounting firms. They translated foreign language documents, and they imaged the phones of relevant custodians at the beginning of the internal investigation, thereby preserving business communications sent on mobile messaging applications. Note the credit there for the preservation of WhatsApp messaging, text messaging, things like that. Gunver also engaged in timely and appropriate remedial measures. They eliminated the use of third-party business agents. They enhanced its third-party due diligence process. They developed and implemented a control framework for internal business developers and additional layers of review and approval for counterparty payments. They enhanced the independent compliance committee and gave it responsibility for reviewing high-risk transactions. They engaged resources to review its compliance program and test the effectiveness of its overall reporting process, its hotline, and the effectiveness of its investigation reports made through the hotline. They evaluated and updated their compensation policy to better incentivize compliance, and they hired additional compliance personnel, tested and enhanced its compliance program, including by conducting compliance culture reviews, testing new third-party due diligence processes and payment controls, and evaluating controls around business development activities. They also developed and implemented a risk-based business communications policy to address the use of ephemeral and encrypted message applications. DOJ also cited Gunver's history of misconduct, and this is perhaps the reason that they ended up having to plead guilty. In October 2019, Gunver reached a resolution with the Office of the Attorney General of Switzerland concerning a corrupt scheme then to bribe officials in Congo and the Côte d'Ivoire to secure oil contracts during the period of 2009 to 2012. And as part of the 2019 Swiss resolution, Gunver admitted that it lacked sufficient controls to prevent the underlying misconduct and failed to take all the reasonable organizational measures required to prevent Gunver from engaging in bribery. The conduct that was the subject of the Ecuadorian prosecution here occurred at the same time as the prior Swiss investigation and resolution. And perhaps DOJ is responding here with its an aggressive enforcement action here because at the same time they were resolving this case with the Swiss and that they were uncovering bribery, Gunver just permitted the Ecuador operations and the Ecuador bribery scheme to continue. So in DOJ applying its corporate enforcement policy, they determined that Gunver should be required to plead guilty to the one count of conspiracy to violate the FCPA, and they gave him a criminal fine that reflected a 25% reduction off the 30th percentile of the applicable guidelines fine range. They earned benefits through cooperation and remediation, no voluntary disclosure credit, but notice the remediation and testing of the enhanced compliance program that resulted in no appointment of an independent compliance monitor. So let's take a look now for a second at the bribery scheme, because it's not very surprising nor ingenious. After all, a number of energy trading companies have been prosecuted for bribery over the years, including Glencore, Vitol, and we have Freepoint. Numerous individuals have been prosecuted, convicted, and some have cooperated from the energy trading industry. The global energy trading market presents obvious numerous risk factors, lots of transactions, lots of incestuous communications and interactions with state-owned entities in the energy markets around the globe. So there are large and valuable energy contracts, oil, gas, that are controlled by foreign-owned companies. All of these actors are considered foreign officials for purposes of the FCPA. And the oil and gas industry obviously has a rich history of corruption, bribery, and favoritism. Gunver, like its competitors, is one of the largest energy trading companies in the world, and its participation in bribery in Ecuador is not surprising. Like its competitors, Gunver enlisted the assistance of corrupt third-party actors, embraced the use of shell companies, and then executed a long-standing bribery scheme to reward Ecuadorian officials in exchange for benefits. including contracts, confidential information, and other favorable benefits. Between 2012 to 2020, Gunvor paid more than $97 million to third parties, knowing that some of the money would end up in the pockets of Ecuadorian officials, including Nelson Arias, a high-ranking official who pled guilty and cooperated. Working through Raymond Cahoot, who also pled guilty and cooperated, Antonio Pereira and his brother Enrique Pereira, as well as other individuals and intermediaries, as well as the Pereira brothers' shell companies, Energy Intelligence and Oil Intelligence, EIC and OIC, respectively, Gunvor funneled bribes through these various entities to Petro-Ecuadorian officials to secure the valuable benefits. Cahoot, who pled guilty and cooperated, helped to arrange the initial bribery scheme to participate in Petro-Ecuador's new program to develop oil-backed loans, through which other state-owned entities in Ecuador provided loans to Petro-Ecuador secured by oil products to be delivered over a period of years. Private trading companies established relationships with the state-owned entities involved in these programs to market, sell, and transport the oil products for delivery. Starting in 2011, Cahoot arranged with his supervisor, the third-party Antonio Pereira, and Nelson Arias, the senior Petro-Ecuadorian official, to arrange with Arias to ensure that a Gunvor-connected state-owned entity, call it state-owned entity number one, qualified for the loan program. Later in 2011, Antonio Pereira met with Nelson Arias in Ecuador to secure an agreement to pay bribes to Arias in exchange for the favorable award of these oil-backed loans for the benefit of Gunvor's backed state-owned entity number one. In 2012, state-owned entity one entered into several contracts with Petro-Ecuador through which state-owned entity one provided loans financed by Gunvor to Petro-Ecuador secured by oil products. Gunvor entered into back-to-back agreements with state-owned entity one to market the oil products delivered pursuant to contracts between state-owned entity one and Petro-Ecuador. Gunvor also entered into quote-unquote service agreements with Antonio Pereira and Enrique Pereira through EIC to facilitate the payment of bribes to Ecuadorian officials. The bulk of the payments reflected per barrel volume fee payments to EIC. Now, these service agreements were obviously sham agreements. The Pereira brothers then used portions of the volume fees to pay bribes to Ecuadorian officials, including Arias, on Gunvor's behalf. In 2015, Gunvor then expanded the scheme to include another state-owned entity, call it State-Owned Entity 2, to provide loans financed by Gunvor to Petro-Ecuador, secured by oil products. Cahoot and his supervisor met with Arias again to secure a similar agreement and arrangement for paying bribes that they used with State-Owned Entity 1. Gunvor updated and expanded its service agreement with Antonio and Enrique Pereira to include per-barrel payments related to oil products delivered pursuant to oil-backed loan agreements to SOE2. Antonio and Enrique Pereira used a portion of these payments to pay bribes to Ecuadorian officials. The Pereira brothers then submitted invoices to Gunvor through their companies, EIC and OIC, for payment of these fees. Cahoot routed the invoices in Gunvor for approval by his supervisors and others who were familiar with the scheme. In exchange for the bribes, Arias and other Ecuadorian officials helped to direct Petro-Ecuador to award contracts to state-owned entities 1 and 2 to benefit Gunvor and provide Gunvor confidential information about Petro-Ecuador that assisted Gunvor in securing business for itself in connection with Petro-Ecuador. In addition to the large volume-based payments in 2014, after executing a specific contract, Pereira, at Gunvor's direction, bought Arias an 18-carat gold Patek Philippe timepiece worth approximately $38,000 in exchange for Arias' assistance with the approval of a contract and for providing confidential information. Arias left Petro-Ecuador in 2017, but after his departure, Gunvor implemented a new method to execute the bribery scheme. So beginning in 2017, the Pereira brothers arranged with other officials to pay bribes for contracts and confidential information, and the Petro-Ecuador official designated an intermediary to assist in executing the scheme. Gunvor continued to make payments through the Pereira brothers based on per-barrel fees purchased by state-owned entities 1 and 2, and Cahoot continued to coordinate processing and payment of the invoices to evade detection. Throughout the conspiracy and up until 2020, Kohet, his supervisor, and the Pereira brothers met in the United States with each other and Petroecuador officials in various combinations to plan and execute the bribery schemes. In total, the Petroecuador officials received approximately $1.7 million in bribes on behalf of Gunver, and Gunver earned $384 million in profits, hence the forfeiture amount. They also used to conceal the scheme and their communications from the beginning of the conspiracy. They were instructed to use personal email accounts using pseudonyms in order to communicate about the scheme. And they also referred to each other as co-conspirators by aliases rather than ever using their actual names. Eventually, in 2018, Gunver and executives and compliance personnel became aware that tens of millions of dollars were paid to Antonio and Enrique Pereira's companies, EIC and OIC, without any supporting documentation to justify these payments. Starting in 2018 and continuing to May 2020, Gunver made requests to the Pereira brothers for supporting documents to justify the commission payments and to meet with executives and compliance personnel. Pereira brothers repeatedly failed to respond to these document requests and were unwilling to meet with Gunver executives and compliance personnel. And notwithstanding their resistance to these basic oversight and monitoring requests, Gunver continued to make illegal payments to the Pereira brothers until January 2020, and they terminated the service agreements with OIC and EIC in May of 2020. It's amazing that it took that long to terminate what was clearly an otherwise improper arrangement. So what did we learn from this recent settlement? Let's put this into context here. This settlement clearly restores DOJ's credibility as to its commitment to aggressive FCPA enforcement. We've had 2 years of relatively slow activity, but this brings much needed attention back to anti-corruption risks as a continuing concern for all global companies. We all read about artificial intelligence, data privacy, cybersecurity risks, as well as generalized climate and other disclosure risks. Anti-corruption risks have stood the test of time, and if anything, have maintained a steadfast, steady position in the list of significant risks for global companies. The Gunver settlement is a well-timed and welcome reminder for corporate boards, senior executives, and legal and compliance personnel on the overall importance of anti-corruption compliance and the important elements of a compliance program. Now, aside from that general observation, overarching concern, let's talk about several important compliance reminders and trends. First, high-risk commodity trading activities. Companies that participate in energy trading markets would be well advised to conduct a self-initiated review of their operations. We've seen one by one the major commodity trading businesses fall under the FCPA enforcement sword. Glencore, Vitol, and now Gunver. More have to be waiting in the wings. Commodity trading combines all of the high-risk elements that warrant strict scrutiny for FCPA violations. Large transactions between traders and foreign energy officials that are lucrative and subject to vigorous competition. Second point, critical third parties. Like every FCPA enforcement action, at the heart of the scheme are corrupt third-party intermediaries who are often segregated into distinct responsibilities that reflect a commitment to execution of an overarching bribery scheme. In the Gunver case, the bribery schemes were carried out with the assistance of two critical third parties, along with layers of shell companies and use of quote-unquote administrative-type third parties for actual transmission and payment of bribes to Petroecuador officials. Given the overall importance of the third parties and the amount of funds being paid to the two third parties, the glaring question for Gunver's board, senior executives, and legal compliance team is, what took you so long? It was not until 2018, 6 years after the bribery scheme was ongoing, for Gunver to start asking questions and looking at the relationship and the payments made to the third parties. My question then begs the obvious need for Gunver in the past and other global companies in the future to develop and implement appropriate monitoring, testing, and reviewing procedures for high-risk third-party business. Such an inquiry should not be difficult to identify, design, and implement, and most companies should be able to identify these transactions quickly and respond appropriately. Similarly, a high-risk third-party review should include an analysis of all payments made to high-risk third parties and the documentation provided to justify such payments. It is one thing to focus on the onboarding process for third parties. We all know about due diligence. And it's quite another to build and commit to robust monitoring, review, and testing procedures. If properly executed, companies should be able to identify quickly those third parties that require additional scrutiny to resolve red flags and other indicators of potential improprieties. Lastly, let me talk about business and gatekeeper inquiries and failures to act. The Gunvor case reflects again the disturbing trend of resistance to business and legal compliance inquiries. Starting in 2018, Gunvor senior executives and legal and compliance officials made inquiries from the Pereira brothers concerning the lack of documentation and the need to meet with Gunvor officials to discuss their activities. The brothers, however, resisted these requests, and it took nearly 2 years to terminate the relationship. In fact, even while they were resisting follow-up requests, Gunvor continued to execute the bribery schemes. There's no plausible justification for Gunvor's delay to put a halt to these activities with these high-risk third parties, especially after they blatantly failed to provide requested information or meet with Gunvor officials. A failure to act in this context provided DOJ important evidence that Gunvor fully was aware of the illegal bribery scheme and was slow to intervene and cease the illegal activities. Well, that's the Gunvor case. It's an interesting case. It's an important reminder to everybody. And please take a look at your high-risk third-party activities and start to conduct a review process of some sort, because monitoring and reviewing here is absolutely critical. Thanks again, everybody, and we'll see you next week with another episode of Corruption, Crime, and Compliance.
If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to support the show is by subscribing on your favorite listening platform. To learn more and connect with Michael Volkoff, go to volkovlaw.com.